This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. From Zuccotti Park to the Rose Kennedy Greenway, Occupy demonstrators are occupying a state of legal limbo. They're in a space that's public, but in a way, it's not. They're public spaces managed or owned by private groups, and those groups reserve the right to evict the Occupy demonstrators at any time. Now, the number of such spaces has grown in American cities in recent years, and that comes with significant implications, according to Gerald Caden, professor of urban planning and design at Harvard. Professor Caden, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks very much for having me.
You have an op-ed in this morning's New York Times where you write about the explosion of a specific type of quasi-public space in New York City in particular. Can you tell us about that?
New York City in 1961, through its zoning resolution, introduced a new type of space that hadn't existed before in cities, the so-called privately owned public space. The city offered zoning concessions, basically allowing developers to build larger than they otherwise would be able to build if they agreed to provide a plaza or an arcade at the base of their buildings.
So is Zuccotti Park, where the Occupy Wall Street demonstrators are based, is that an example of one such space?
Yes.
Okay, and that's New York City. Are there notable examples of similarly privately owned but public spaces in Boston?
There are a number of them. It's not clear exactly how many. Nobody has done a very precise study, but they're dotted around.
Post Office Square is one of them?
Post Office Square has an interesting lineage of having that mixture. Rose Wharf is a more classic privately owned public space. Upstairs in the actual building, there is a space, and that's where privately owned public spaces in Boston reside in different parts, upstairs, downstairs, and around.
Now, on the one hand, it would seem that it's of great benefit to people to have these public spaces in otherwise large-scale private developments, but you say that the proliferation of this kind of development actually comes with some peril, and what are those perils?
If one were to be extreme about it, the fox is guarding the hen house. The private owner who has been either forced to provide the public space as a condition for development approval or has voluntarily provided it, but in return for a valuable zoning concession, has never actually provided it for public use. Public use has not been the fundamental inspirational guiding principle for the developer. So as a result, often the spaces are not either wonderfully designed or wonderfully managed for the benefit of the public. In New York City, for example, in a study I did, we found roughly 50% of the buildings that had a privately owned public space had privatized that space, either by denying access to the public or by removing required amenities such as seating or by even allowing nearby commercial uses like restaurants to spill onto the space and charge customers for using it, thereby rendering it not exactly public.
And that's the problem. I mean, you note that in Zuccotti Park, other than the city regulation that the park be left open 24 hours a day, there's no other rules or guidance from the city of New York about how that space should be used.
That's correct. There has been an ongoing practice in which the Department of City Planning has said, we believe that rules should be reasonable rules, that's the adjective, and one should look to rules, for example, in city-owned parks as benchmarks. But that's about all we have, and that's why nobody really knows what the owners, the current owners, Brookfield Office Properties of Zuccotti Park, may or may not do in their space.
Well, you note in your New York Times op-ed that on October 13th, new rules were announced that permit passive recreation only and actually prohibit things like camping and lying down on the ground or benches if it interferes with others in Zuccotti Park. But these rules are unenforced at the moment, so no one knows what's going to happen next.
No, because it's not a matter of simply announcing rules. It's a matter of, is Brookfield Office Properties going to call the city of New York and say, there are people on my space that are trespassing because they are not observing my rules for my private property? And then at that point, the city has to figure out whether that's a reasonable rule, because this is not simply private property. It's also legally obligated to be public space, open and usable by the public.
Well, that's in Zuccotti Park in New York City. The Occupy movement in Boston is on the Rose Kennedy Greenway in Dewey Square, which is kind of the mirror image of what's happening in Zuccotti Park, because here we have a publicly owned space that's managed by a private conservancy. So do you see that as having a similar set of perils as you identified in New York?
often the public owner has some of the same concerns, interestingly, that a private owner may have. The public owner does worry about large groups congregating, does worry about the quality of the lawn and whether or not it gets damaged. Now, the public owner has one additional worry or concern or restriction, which is that the First Amendment unambiguously applies to the public owner. And under the cases that have interpreted the free speech clause, public owners don't have to allow any large group to dominate a street or a sidewalk or a park in the impermanent future. They are allowed, as a public owner, to apply what are called time, place, and manner restrictions. So it's sometime, at some place, in some manner. Nobody can simply dominate a space forever. But that's the law, and then there's the reality of what's actually happening today.
Gerald Caden is a professor of urban planning and design at Harvard. Professor Caden, thank you so much for your time.
Sure thing.